Janovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
I have a lot of really strong opinions on a lot of things, so you're not going to be surprised when I say I have very strong opinions about the ACT here in Utah. Morgan Lyon-Cotty is filling in for Debbie Dujanovic today. She's the associate director at the Hinckley Institute of Politics up at the University of Utah. So when I say the SAT or the ACT, do you get a pit in your stomach like I do?
Yeah, I think we all still, doesn't matter if it was 5 years ago, 2 decades ago, 4 decades ago, I think we all are still feeling the residual stress from taking those tests.
It is so long. 4 hours.
Yeah. And I mean, now I think they're more aware of water breaks or letting kids eat a protein bar. In the 80s and 90s, nobody cared about our blood sugar.
No.
We just sat down and took it.
They don't care how dehydrated you are.
No, your brain stops functioning when you're hungry and when you're thirsty.
I'm trying to remember at what point I ejected on the test. Like, what section was it? Was it hour three? Was it in math? Was it early on? I can guarantee you I wasn't paying attention at science.
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember just staring at some point and thinking, how am I supposed to do this? And I, if I remember, I took it twice and thinking, okay, I know where I need to improve. And my scores just swapped. Like, I did better in math and worse in English. What are the four sections? I just remember four. And so my score actually stayed the same.
Stayed
and I remember
the same
I was
overall.
So mad. I did so much better on the other sections I'd focused on, and the other ones just seesawed.
Okay, so 2,000 colleges and universities, they no longer require ACT or SAT scores. But you still have over 3 million kids in America taking these tests. How much focus do you put in your family on like getting ready for the ACT, preparing for the ACT? I think you're kind of coming into this stage, right?
I'm just coming into this stage. Next year is the first year I will have a kid in high school. When you hit that ninth grade mark and all of a sudden you try to remind them, hey, guess what? These grades now are part of your college application. So we have not actually talked about this. So this is a really good conversation for me to be thinking about, that this is an option if my kid wants to go to school at one of the universities that still takes these. Are we going to be focusing on this? And also, even the schools that don't require it, it now can be viewed as this could be a boost. If you do really well, this can help with your application or with those scholarship applications.
Let's talk about doing really well. 1.4 million kids take the ACT. 0.0025 of those kids get a perfect score. I mean,
that's astounding.
Extremely rare. About a little over 3,000 kids in the entire nation will get a perfect score.
And everybody in that senior class at that high school, perfect score.
Yeah, everyone knows the 36 kid.
It's a big deal.
Well,
everyone knows the 35 kid and the 34 kid.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I had an intern who I nicknamed Herschel Walker because she scored a 34.
Yeah.
I mean, I called her Herschel for the entire internship because it's so impressive. So to get a perfect score, 36, incredible. Well, I have one of those kids in my neighborhood. He happens to be my son's best friend. He's the smartest kid in the room. Everyone knows that he got a perfect score. And I wanted to know, okay, so you got the 36, you worked hard to get it. What did you think that meant for your future?
I thought that was my golden ticket into any college I wanted, which is not true, really, in retrospect. But yeah, I thought that.
But it's
I had
what you
made.
Thought at the time.
Yeah, I thought I had it made.
Anywhere you wanted to go.
Yeah.
How big? Like, what kind of schools are we talking about?
Like MIT, Caltech, those kind of schools. Turns out Caltech isn't even accepting ACT scores right now, so I didn't even apply to Caltech.
So he realized, okay, this great score, it's not going to help me in Caltech. He applied to MIT and then BYU. MIT, he understood, that's a long shot. I mean, that's a 6%, 4 to 6% acceptance rate. Like, BYU, let's be honest, it's a great school. The acceptance rate is 60, 70%. He's like, I've got a 36. That's my backup. I'm super happy going to BYU. He gets rejected from both. So help me. both of them.
It's brutal. And as you said, I'm just coming into this trying to think about, talking to my kids, figure out what they want to do, and navigate that space. Should we be focusing on GPA? Should we be focusing on extracurriculars? Should we be focusing on these different things while also letting them do what they want to do? Go and play sports and go have that free time and hang out with friends and have an actual childhood.
So I wanted to know, his name's Trenton. And I wanted to know, okay, so you applied to MIT, apply to BYU, then what happens?
I didn't really find out much about that until I got my applications back. I was rejected from both the schools I applied to, BYU and MIT. BYU was a real shocker for me. MIT, I knew that it was a long shot to get in, even with the 36. And I had heard actually that MIT really values a high ACT score. So I was kind of surprised. I kind of had like a dream in my heart that I was like, I know I'm going to get in, but it just didn't happen.
So you knew MIT was going to be competitive.
Yeah.
But that was your goal. That was your hope, your dream. That wasn't a big shocker though. Still a disappointment.
Still a disappointment for sure. But I knew the admission rates. I think it's like 6% or something crazy like that.
But BYU.
BYU was a shocker for me. I had no idea. I still have no idea, actually, like what went wrong on my application, if anything went wrong, or if it just the stars didn't align. I have no idea.
Now, in retrospect, I'm sure he wishes he would have applied to a dozen colleges. But he was just so confident. The ACT, I think, may have built up enough confidence in him. He's like, oh, yeah, well, here's the shoot for the moon, but this one I'm for sure going to get into.
Yeah, and it's just such a heartbreaker. And I'm glad that this puts a personal view on this. I think sometimes people see the videos on TikTok or Instagram of kids who say they did or didn't get into certain schools. You don't necessarily know. But this puts a view on this, that how hard it is to navigate this space. And I'm sure there are some people that are saying, well, why didn't they just apply to more schools? But you don't know every family's situation. I don't know this family situation, but other kids, it costs money. You do pay a fee to apply to every single school. It takes time. You have to write different types of essays depending mm-hmm. on the schools. So this is just a new space that, and I do mean new. This is not something that even big brothers and sisters can help with, aunts and uncles, parents. This is different than when they applied.
And there are so many Ivy League schools that over the last several years started making the ACT, SAT test optional is the term, where they don't necessarily take that into account. And these are the elite universities in the nation, and now they're starting to backtrack a little bit. Now they're starting to say, maybe we do require them after all. But I want to talk to Trenton's mom, because in my estimation, when I'm looking at it, outside looking in, I'm like, this family did everything right. They focused on the right things. They helped where they could. The child did absolutely everything they could, but it still wasn't enough. Does this change the way you parent? Because they certainly move the goalposts. They're moving the goalposts all over the place. I don't know where to kick the ball. So up next, we'll talk to mom and find out, okay, does this change the way you parent your younger kids?
Dave and Janovic.
I know you can't have favorites when it comes to your kids, but you can have a favorite friend. And my favorite friend that my kid has is Trenton Caldwell. They've been friends for a number of years. He's a great kid. Well, he's got a 3.8 GPA. He's taken 7 AP exams. He's gotten 5 on just about everyone. Perfect score on the ACT. And this kid got rejected from the 2 schools he applied to. And you're like, if it was MIT and Harvard and Yale, like that makes sense. Yeah, he got rejected from MIT, but he also got rejected from BYU. BYU has a 70% acceptance rate. The kid has passed 7 AP classes. And he got a 36 on his ACT. Like, if this kid can't make it, what kind of chance do the rest of us have? Which brings up the larger conversation of what are we doing with the ACT in Utah? Morgan Lyoncotti is filling in for Debbie Dujanovic today. You remember this. You took the ACT. You remember being traumatized by it.
I wasn't truly, it was little t trauma. Let's be clear. It was just known as a rite of passage. It was really clear. This is what you do. You work on your GPA. You do this. You know, I applied to college in the previous century. And so we didn't even worry as much about extracurriculars. You know, if you put down if you were an officer, if you were a captain of a sports team. But what parents are navigating now is very different.
Jamie Caldwell is Trenton's mom. And Jamie, I gotta figure out. As a parent, as you're watching this happen, because you've watched your son go through this, work hard, stay home, don't go out with the friends to study or write something, what was your reaction when he got the rejection letter?
Super surprised. I was almost like ready to be disappointed if he didn't have a full ride scholarship, you know? So the fact that he didn't even get in was just completely, completely shocking.
It wasn't even admission because our minds go, and you know how difficult it is. You know,
right.
the numbers and how difficult it is to get a great ACT score, a perfect ACT score. So what do you do, or how did you react when obviously the surprise kind of settles and now the disappointment sets in?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought a lot about this because he's my oldest of four, and I'm like, I feel like I really put a huge emphasis on academics in general, but especially the ACT. For me, I actually had, I did decent on the ACT. I didn't get a perfect score, but I did decent, and I had a scholarship to a university that was called the ACT Award Scholarship. So in my mind, this was, like he said, it was a golden ticket. That was a way to get into these great colleges. And so we really focused on that. I made him even quit his job with your son because I knew he was taking this really rigorous class load, and I wanted him, in my mind, I was like, okay, a college scholarship is going to be worth more than the money that he's going to make working at in retail right now, you know? And so I feel like we kind of tailored our lives to really focus on his academics. And I've done that for my other kids. And now I'm like, shoot, maybe I did it wrong. Like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, it's so difficult. As parents, we're always trying to figure out, are we doing this right? The time machine, if we could just have a time machine to go back and fix some of these little things. But what are the next steps? Like, how are you, as you said, you have your younger kids. So now what are you trying to think of? What advice would you give parents? Should they be focusing more on extracurriculars, their GPA? Like, how are you processing this? And also, like, not even that you need to course correct. It sounds like you made so many great decisions, but navigate this.
Oh, man, I feel like that's an impossible thing to answer because I feel like he did the extracurricular and he does have a decent GPA. He doesn't have a 4.0, but if it was a weighted GPA, it would be over a 4.0, you know? And so
he took hard classes, yeah, seven yeah. AP classes.
Right, right. So I really honestly have no idea. I do know with my youngest, so with my oldest three, they're all really close in age. I really pushed them to do accelerated math so they could do calc their junior year. And with my youngest, I just decided it clearly didn't matter. And so I am not going to push you to do that. Let's take an easier load. It didn't matter, you know?
Yeah. And you talked about your own experience, this amazing scholarship. I have a sibling who's like just one stage ahead of me. So I'm always asking her, like, what classes are my kids supposed to be registering for? How do I navigate this sports, this coach situation? What were you, apart from your own great experience, what were the things that you were watching and that you really took lessons from?
With Trenton?
Yeah, just with your kids and academics and navigating this space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always encouraged, we're not taking regular classes. We're taking honors, and we're, you know, if it's a subject you enjoy or you're good at, we'll do an AP. All three of them are in high school. They're all just full class loads. Because that in my mind, that was the thing to do. Those are objective measures that colleges can look at. And in my mind, some of those other things were subjective. And so I'm like, we're going to do the very best we can on these objective things. And obviously try and do awesome on subjective things too, but they're subjective. So it's different for every kid. Yeah.
That was one of the things as I was talking to Trenton, and I want to play a little bit of his reaction, because I asked him, okay, so you didn't make it. Do you know why?
Then just we're unable to offer you admission.
How frustrating is that?
It's pretty frustrating because I really feel like if I knew what it was, I would be able to fix it lickety split, you know, but it's just impossible really because I have no idea. So I am planning on reapplying and I think I'm just going to do pretty much the same thing. I don't know what I would change other than applying early action to both schools. But I can't think of anything else that would change that.
I think that's got to be supremely frustrating because when you get rejected, you get the form letter. Sorry, didn't make it. They don't give you a reason. They make you jump through all the hoops, write the essays, you know, put yourself out there. But when they say no, they don't say anything more than we just no. So how frustrating is that for you to know, to not know where he could have improved his application?
Super frustrating. I mean, anyone that I've talked to, like high school counselors or anybody that knows about this is like, it has to be a mistake. But whether it is or not, we have no recourse other than to reapply, which we will. But it's just interesting because we have no clue, you know, like what we got to do better, what we've got to do better the next time.
And when we come back, I want to talk to the University of Utah because the way universities are weighing the ACT and the SAT has changed over the years. It used to be the be-all, end-all when I was growing up. And now you've got Ivy League schools that have decided to make it test optional, meaning you can apply and we won't even look at your scores. We'll look at your grades, your essays. But we've seen Yale, Harvard, Dartmouth, Brown all say we're not taking that into account. And now these schools have reversed course and started saying, we're going to bring back the standardized testing. We're going to start including that into our applications. But the University of Utah just released, they said, nope, we're not going to do that.
Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
For the last half hour, we've been talking about the SAT and the ACT, standardized testing in the nation. There's a conversation about whether or not they are beneficial. And colleges and universities are, in my opinion, sending a little bit of a mixed message about whether or not these are good, if they're valuable. Because in ninth grade here in Utah, your kid's going to take a mandatory ACT prep course. You can be prepared for that. And then they can take the ACT as a sophomore, as a junior, as a senior. In fact, Morgan, I don't know if you know this, at least in the Davis School District, at my kids' high school, they have Junior Appreciation Day, which is the day the juniors take the ACT. Everybody else gets the day off.
Oh.
Sophomores get off. Senior, they don't even need to show up to school.
Well, good for everybody else.
It's great. Everyone loves the juniors on that day. So
the juniors don't love the juniors. They don't love being juniors on that day.
Because they have to take a four-hour test, something that millions of kids across the country are doing. The ACT specifically, it's 1.4 million kids will take the ACT every single year. So this is something. And the idea is that what do you understand? Like what dots do you connect when you think, oh, we take the ACT because of this?
Well, I think historically there was this view that it's a baseline. It's a great, I think I've heard you in the past say it's a great equalizer, right? We have a standard. And with COVID, greater awareness of social dynamics, it came into the conversation that maybe this isn't the great equalizer. Maybe this doesn't actually show us what we want to know about students, and colleges and universities took action.
And it wasn't just a few colleges and universities. Over 2,000 colleges and universities stopped requiring or measuring or weighing the ACT, the standardized testing, in their admissions process. In fact, even here in Utah, Utah State, University of Utah, and BYU have removed that requirement. And I wanted to know why, because I think there's some problems with the ACT and standardized testing. I don't think any kid should have to sit down for 4 hours and knock out a test. I think that is more endurance than knowledge. So I think there's some real problems with the way we administer the test. But I do like the standard. I like to know that if you understand calculus in New Orleans or in Utah, that we can say, oh, you understand calc. You get it. But I want to know why Utah has moved away from what I consider highly valuing the ACT or the SAT. So joining us right now from the University of Utah, Senior Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management, Steve Robinson. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Help walk me through this. I know I've got your coworker, Morgan Lyon-Cotty, with me. So I'm very interested. Walk us through the thought process at the University of Utah and how you handle standardized testing.
Well, we wanted to give students the option. That was the big thing that we wanted to make sure of, that there, as for reasons that you all just mentioned, you know, there's some students that really excel at testing. There are others that don't excel necessarily in a four-hour examination. So we wanted students who did want us to know their scores to have that opportunity to present those to us. And we also had some students who, you know, if they didn't want to share that, that was okay as well. Before the University of Utah became permanently test optional, we spent a lot of time looking at what had happened since COVID. You know, we became test optional because of COVID initially, but we stayed test optional because of the research that we've been doing about what happens post-enrollment to students, you know, who either submitted the test or did not. And what we found here at the University of Utah, and I only speak for my campus, is that GPA is a better indicator of success post-enrollment than a standardized test score. Now, that, you know, varies from campus to campus, obviously, based on the applicant pool. But what we're seeing consistently over the last 4 years is that, you know, that's been the case here at the University of Utah. Now, certainly, as I said a moment ago, we want to remain optional. So if a student wants us to know their test score and they think that will strengthen their application, by all means, we would want to consider that. But we now know that it's not the best indicator of post-enrollment success, at least for the University of Utah.
So, Dr. Robinson, what are some of those other indicators? Being at the U, I watch these things closely, and I know we've had some incredible classes the past few years. They've been our most diverse and our most high-achieving incoming groups of first years. So how are you getting these incredible classes without relying on something that we looked at for decades and decades?
Well, I think it starts with how we recruit students. You know, we are going out much further afield, much more often within Utah as well as in non-resident markets, talking to students about the University of Utah. We're attracting a larger applicant pool every year. In fact, this year we are breaking a new record with the number of students applying for our first-year class for this fall. I think it starts there with the types of students we're recruiting. We have more students expressing interest in attending the U, and because of the increased competition, you know, that drives up, I think, the academic profile of our applicant pool a bit, and we're starting to see some of the impacts of that.
One concern that I would have, Dr. Robinson, by not heavily weighing the standardized testing, the ACT or the SAT, in lieu of in weighing the GPA in a bigger way, is Utah does not have a weighted GPA. So if I load up my course classes with a bunch of easy classes, and I don't take honors classes, and I don't push myself with AP classes, how would you find the best applicants? Because you could have a 3.5 kid that had 7 AP classes who's a rock star, but you wouldn't see that through a GPA.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And this is why we do transcript analysis, you know, where we're looking at students that apply, that we have what we call a holistic approach to admitting a student. You know, we start with the numbers, the grade point average, the standardized test score, if we have it, and then we move from there to looking at other things like grade trends. I mean, did a student, you know, academically excel all 4 years of high school, or were there dips and, you know, valleys, you know, that a student experienced? How about by subject? Were they strong in math throughout all 4 years, or did, you know, calculus, as you mentioned earlier, stump them a bit? Those are some of the things that we look at. We also give students an opportunity to tell us about things that we may not immediately be able to find just by looking at their application materials. So there is actually a section of our application where we encourage students to talk about their academic experience, if there's some special factors that they want us to know about. And we take all of that and put it into our, kind of our application decision process. Most of our decisions, you know, are pretty easy, but this is why we have a holistic process, is that it's the hard ones where you want to spend a lot of time thinking about the student, not as just another applicant, but will they be successful here at the U once they get here?
So when we talk about this, it feels like this process, sometimes it sort of feels like an equation. But when the students are applying, it feels really personal. And so, absolutely. And especially because they're looking at their parents who are either Gen Xers or elder millennials who had very different experiences in the late 90s. So what do you tell parents who ask you, what should I do? Should my kids be focusing on GPA? Should they be focusing on, you know, extracurriculars or leadership? What is that advice you give to parents if you just have like that elevator pitch and they're just desperate to know what to do?
Well, I think that students should lean into both their talents as well as where they have opportunities for growth, because we're looking for, I think, and I believe I can speak for many campuses when I say this, is that we're all looking for very well-rounded students. Yes, we want those who have excelled academically, but leadership also takes other forms. The opportunity to be successful in college takes other forms, and we're looking for that as well. So this is where the extracurriculars come in for, you know, public service, different things like that that students tell us about as part of this application. And again, back to why, you know, this is a holistic process, and it doesn't rest upon a simple equation. If we were doing it just on the numbers, it's a very easy kind of thing to make a decision on. These are not easy decisions because we are talking about individuals, but that's what I always tell parents and families and students when I'm talking to them is, you know, lean into both where you do well, but also make sure that you're leaning into where you know that you could be stronger, and work in as much as you can on both of those things. That will make you the better applicant for the University of Utah and maybe any other campus that you're considering.
Dr. Robinson, thank you for joining us. Steve Robinson's the Senior Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University of Utah. Thank you. Wow, what a great conversation. I think, you know, as a parent looking at it, I think, I wish there was a better playbook. I wish there was a path where I knew if I just checked all the boxes, if I took all the right turns and left turns, that it would lead me to the right destination. But right now in the college application process, especially for the upper tier, high level Ivy League schools, it just feels so subjective to be Morgan.
Well, and that's why in the previous segment, I really appreciated what Jamie was saying, that the test scores, the GPA, it felt objective. The extracurriculars, those other things feel subjective. But what we're learning is that they are looking at this holistic approach, and they really are wanting students to show they have, you know, this well-rounded upbringing and education. And this is, again, this is just new territory for all of the parents and all the kids trying to navigate it.
Up next, one quarter of U.S. adults age 50 or older who are not yet retired say they expect to never retire. How about that? 50-year-olds? Geez, that's a dreary thought. Never retire? Let's learn more from ABC next.